think we're on.
Thanks for joining us, everyone. I hope you're feeling good this morning. So my name is Barry Castle, and I work in Link Technical Marketing. Prior to joining the Link team, I worked for a couple of years with the Skype organization. Following the acquisition, made sense for me to move over to Link, given that I was involved in Skype for Business at the time. So I've enjoyed the run in the Link organization.
My name's Derek Whittle, and I'm also in Link Marketing. I spent a year in the Skype division as well, so we both have that a bit of that history. And I've been with Microsoft for quite a number of years in a number of different roles. We're excited that you are here during what Americans call lunch hour, so thanks for joining us, and let's get started.
Very good. So thanks, Derek. And we've got a few housekeeping slides to go through. You've seen these before. Use these as your references, and obviously if you're watching this off the web, then thank you for joining us as well. For that reason, I'm going to ask that we use the microphone when you have questions. Obviously, it's easier for us to respond to those questions at the end. We've got a lot of demos to get through, and it'll be a little bit of a journey. You're going to see we'll keep it creative, but we'll try to share as much technical detail as we can as we roll through everything to do with Link and Skype. Key takeaways today, we're going to share deep dive information around the kind of inner workings of Link Skype connectivity. We're also going to touch on recent announcements, so we'll share some of the things that Skype has recently put out into the market, as well as touching on the Skype broadcasting solution called Skype TX. We shared that with you in the first video, those of you that arrived a little bit early. We were playing a TED video with a choir. That system was able to support 30 participants in a simultaneous call, all participating as part of the choir, and that was developed as part of our broadcast outreach, a program called Skype Media, and the product itself is called Skype TX. We'll touch on that. We'll give you the technical details behind it. It may not be relevant to your organizations, but I think increasingly video plays an active part of social marketing and social programming. So something to be aware of, even if you're not a customer of that kind of application today, is something you should know about. So first of all, why Skype? Why is Skype of interest to a Link customer? We both work in the Link organization. So why have we gone to the trouble of linking these two communities together? Well, the truth of the matter is that the world is quickly moving to an on-net environment. In other words, we can make assumptions about the sorts of people that we can interact with simply because they're connected to the internet. And whether that's on a mobile device or a desktop computer of some sort, so long as we reach the places where people typically are connecting to the internet, then we have the ability to communicate with them, not just with chats and voice, but also by adding video into the mix. Now, when you look at these numbers, they're quite astounding. You'll see the bottom number there, 38% of global international calling minutes are actually minutes that go over Skype in one way or another. And that's an astounding statistic when you think that the company was started in 2003. And just to put that in perspective, most major carriers are sitting somewhere in the sub 10% region because they tend to be nationally focused. And it's part of the fact that Skype goes across boundaries that makes this such an interesting application. And then when you think that 45% of the calls that are made with Skype are actually using video, this tells us that we have a community that we can now address with our enterprise, or if we work in the government, for example, in government-based communications portals, we can now make assumptions about the people on the far end. This is appropriate for a contact center type play, but just one-to-one type connectivity with people that we interact with. We can assume that they've either got a Skype account today, or they have easy access to download the Skype application, interact with us. And that makes life a lot easier, and we can start anticipating that in our business models. So as we think about everything that opens up, because we do this connectivity, there's a lot of pent-up eagerness from the customer base. And the fact that you're all here, we have a very large crowd today, shows me that there's impatience to see us deliver this. Show of hands, who's impatient? Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for joining me in the show of hands. I'm sure there are more of you that held back just because of your activities last night. All right. Over to Derek.
And there are many places where you're seeing new innovation on the Skype consumer side. In particular, we've highlighted some here. Outlook.com right now. Anybody use Outlook.com? If you go there, you can use Skype to do calls and have chats that way. Skype is committed to being multi-platform and will continue to be that way, just as Link is. So there's a BlackBerry version. You can actually do what are called video messages as well. That's a new feature. And then one of the kind of the coolest things there at the bottom there is called Skype Quick. And it's sort of a Snapchat kind of effect where you can send a short video that will exist for maybe a couple of weeks, and then it just goes away. So a lot of new things happening. The Skype Translator. Anybody seen the demo of the Skype Translator? That's a new application that will ship, I believe, next month is the plan. December is going to ship. On the Skype modern client, where you'll be able to actually do real-time translation, I think in 7 languages. So it's pretty exciting stuff, a lot of great new things happening on the Skype consumer side.
Yeah, great. So we've been demonstrating Link Skype connectivity for some time, of course. And we got feedback from customers that we needed to improve one aspect of the journey when we were doing that. And it was a big enough issue that we stepped back our ability to do these demos. So we're happy now because we're back out, able to do the demos. Look for news on this. Track the Skype blog because as I said, we're as eager to get this out and into your hands as you are, so that you can start getting the knowledge and just the experience of how this all works on your networks, as well as the journey of provisioning it. All right. One of the key drivers of the success of Skype, you may not be aware of, in fact, but Skype incorporates a super wideband codec called Silk. And the Silk codec performs particularly well on non-quality of service networks. So if you were in the previous session, you heard about all of the challenges of putting real-time media onto a corporate network or over the WAN. And of course, the WAN becomes the bottleneck, but when you go out to the public internet, it's even more of a challenge. And that certainly includes communicating over a smartphone with one of the endpoints. Silk performs particularly well. There are capabilities like forward error correction that we've implemented within our implementation of Silk that deliver a very high quality call. And we've done head-to-head analysis of G722 real-time audio, which is the codec that's built into Link, going up against the Silk codec that we've been using in the Skype network. And we know that Skype actually consumes about 30% less bandwidth and delivers significant quality improvements in sort of high jitter or high packet loss type environments. But even on good quality of service networks, Silk still delivers a better quality of service experience than real-time audio on the G722. So for that reason, expect more use of Silk within our product. And you may not know this, but now you will. Silk is the foundational codec for part of the Opus standard. That was an initiative that that Skype was involved in to move the market as a whole to a super wideband codec capability. So the Opus standard that has been ratified by the IETF is actually based on the Silk codec. So look for more use of Silk and Opus in general. And you possibly saw an announcement earlier this week about our support for WebRTC by using the ORTC APIs within Skype. So if you didn't see that, do go ahead and check the blog. There's not really much more news than that, but you'll see that the Opus codec is referenced within that blog. And we're recommending you just keep tracking that particular blog and announcement for more news. I have nothing more to say at the moment, but it's worthwhile knowing where we're taking our embedded capability. But the thing that Derek was talking about earlier is actually significant. The use of Skype within Outlook.com is a good example of an embedded web-based web browser experience that we will expect as we move forwards. Show of hands, who have you attended the developer session? I believe this is dev-b303. In that session, we provide a demonstration of embedded web-based media control for Link, so that you can develop Link-based applications and have customers visit websites and interact with your call center, for example, directly from the website. The example that's given is actually the case of self-diagnosis using a web bot on the back end, followed by an interaction directly with a nurse or a doctor. But you can see, by thinking that one through, you can see how that works in a support environment or in a contact center environment. And certainly the state of the art today with Skype opens up a whole range of new multimedia style contact center experiences. So do have a look at that in its recorded form if you didn't get into that room. But I'm going to reference that in a couple of slides' time. The other items here are initiatives that Skype has delivered over the years, but you can see that second down is the Skype TX broadcasting, and I'm going to dig into that in a little more depth in a second. All right, so the broadcasting initiative is really focused on broadcasters initially. So what that means is organizations, these could be large enterprises. So if you're in the financial services space, for example, it's more than likely that you have your own broadcasting studio within your premises. That's not the case for everyone. But increasingly people are doing this, you know, to self-deliver their own interviews, their own broadcast content, whether that's going into interviews with the press or whether it's simply using packaged content internally on websites or company events. So if your organization has broadcasting capabilities, then you might want to pay a bit more attention to what I'm going to show you now. So over time, we expect this broadcasting capability to be included in the education space, in radio. Obviously, it's already widely used there, but ultimately into the enterprise as a whole. I'm going to show a quick video now. I'll probably stop this halfway through, but it just gives you a sense of how the system works. Whoops, pressed the wrong button. Here we go.
Hi there, my name's Carl Blundell. I'm with the Skype TX product team. And you join us here today in the Skype London studio, where we're ready to join Barry and Derek on a call. Let's see, Barry and Derek, there they are. Hi. So we've brought Barry and Derek into the small studio using Skype TX. So this studio is a fairly standard TV studio. It's a small production unit that you might find in somebody who's doing a weekly webcast or something like that. Geoff in here is operating a little mixer or a switcher, as it's known in some parts. He can select what's going to air and what's being recorded. He can also control what video is going back to our callers so that we can control what they can see as well. Beneath that is a sound mixer. Again, we want to find control over audio levels, and we can also control the sound going back to the call. Skype TX has fairly standard TV interfaces so that it can link in with all these existing systems. We've got four Skype TX units over here in the rack, and they all control from a single piece of software so that one operator can summon up calls on any number of units, as many as required. From a shared contact. So as I said, we've already got Derek and Barry joining us here. Because this is a TV studio, we can control where they go onto a screen, or we can cut to them, or we can bring them into, as we're doing here, special effects, where we put them into boxes. So hi guys, how are you?
Yeah, doing great, thanks.
Yeah, we're good. How's TechEd going?
Yeah, we're thrilled. It's been a great event, awesome.
Fantastic.
That's
you
where
have any questions?
Yeah, so so we're a technical audience here today, and you know, I think let's start out with the physical layer. You know, how do we cable all of this stuff up? Is it just plain Ethernet? Is it fiber? Is it coax? What do you use?
Okay, the first thing is to say that Skype CX, one of the key features is it outputs video in the format that is needed to work in a TV studio. And that's normally known as HDSDI. Serial.
Okay, I paused him there.
Digital format.
He provides, there we go. He provides all of the details about what I've got on this slide here. So let's go with me. I think the audio is slightly better, but basically, there's no test on this, guys, but effectively, Derek and I are dialing in over on the right-hand side there using Skype. For each Skype instance, what we have is a breakout gateway that sits at the top here. That gateway is equipped with a digital line card that will take the Skype audio and the Skype video, split those out, and then feed them into the broadcasting system. So the mixer table for the audio, the mixer table for the video are receiving the Skype feeds separated out. Of course, there's a synchronization device, a generator that sits in there and basically time stamps each of the feeds so that you can basically rewind, go forwards, etc. And then there's software that is delivered, you see that kind of top right, that allows us to do some more intelligent stuff like watermarking the speakers so we can have the names of each speakers underneath. You can brand it with your broadcasting organization's brand or use Skype, you know, you're given options. And then there's also an orientation capability. So if you're taking a feed from someone who's using a cell phone, a smartphone, and they switch it like this, they switch the orientation, the system's clever enough to know how to maintain the head in the right direction. And if video quality falls below a certain threshold, what it'll do is it'll pick up a photo, a still image, from the early part of the call and just place that on the video feed, possibly with a, you know, video feed lost notification of some sort. But when you put all of this together, effectively what you've got is at a fraction of the cost of a typical broadcasting capability. If I told you the price here, I may be overstepping the mark, but somewhere in the sub $15,000 gets you each one of these Skype boxes. In the broadcasting industry, typically you can add a zero to those numbers when people put the equipment together. So this is a huge cost-saving opportunity. And the news organizations that make heavy use of Skype for their news feeds, they love this Skype approach because it avoids the use of a satellite link for a typical broadcast connection. So this was by way of information on how this stuff works. We're at TechEd, and we wanted to share some of the kind of the behind-the-scenes plumbing on how we make this stuff work. We have an active campaign team that does product placement, and this is how you see Skype show up in all kinds of media programming. But obviously there are opportunities here for social media type capabilities where you would feed these programs onto websites, etc. Of course, you need more equipment on the back end to do that. But effectively, you know, this is probably an area you hadn't really thought about, but we wanted to share the technology behind it. There are three OEM partners that have developed these gateways, and they're available today on the marketplace. I'm showing them here. Each of them has different skill sets and different specializations. Riedel, for example, at the bottom there is a widely used broadcasting system vendor. So what we find is many broadcasting shops have already got Riedel. I may not be saying that name right, maybe Riedel, but have already got this type of equipment. So this embeds with that very easily. They also have a wide distribution network. And then, you know, QuickLink in the UK, NewTek also have wide distribution capabilities. So well worth going to the websites, checking pricing availability within your geography. But this is actually quite recent news, maybe available a month, 2 months. So We thought we'd share this with you as well. You can read more by going to the media.skype.com website to learn more about our media and broadcasting capabilities. I'm sure there's impatience for us to move it on, right? So here we go, Link and Skype.
So as we mentioned, Barry talked about why did we bring these two products, why did we acquire Skype? And it really is about this notion of universal communication. So it's really enabling from the smallest business to the largest business to contact their suppliers, their partners, their friends and family, and really being able to have that with voice and video. And that's what's so important about this Link Skype Connectivity version 2 will bring video to this experience. And we're going to show it to you today, and hopefully we'll be shipping it very, very soon.
Awesome. So we're going to cover off sort of where the system has been.
Yep.
So with version 1, which has been available for, well, over a year, a year and a half now, this was audio only plus chat, but it didn't have video. So we need to kind of step the game up a little bit there. But it turned out to be somewhat complex, and particularly because the feedback from here had already sort of opened up something of a can of worms about the approach that we were taking to the way you move this thing forwards. And you'll see that in the next slide. We also weren't including mobile at that time. So let's have a look at where we wanted to take the V2 version. Oh, and by the way, I should say that some of the Link contact center application partners had set this up so that they could receive Skype calls as inbound calls into those contact centers. So for version 2, so what's changed here is we're adding video. You can also see here that we have Skype ID support in plan. Now that won't be here on day 1, but one of the reasons that we've had a little bit of a hesitation here is the feedback from customers was that the process required to merge Skype accounts with Microsoft accounts was onerous. It was quite a lot of effort to get a call started. You know, let's say I wanted to talk to Derek and he was a Link user and I'm a Skype user. When I do that, I shouldn't have to go through a whole bunch of steps to get that up and running. And the truth of the matter is that you did need to do that. So we've been addressing that issue, and I can't give you more details at this time, but do expect Skype ID support to be arriving soon after we release this next version to the market for trials. So the other aspects of this that we needed to address was security. If you think about the way that we manage real-time communications and applications in general requires a partnership between the security officer as well as the Link admin. And for us to simply throw in an additional Skype call into the mix was obviously opening up a little bit of a can of worms. And what I mean by that is that the behavior of Skype as it transited over NAT and firewall mechanisms, in many cases, would trigger alerts. So with version 1, we kind of had a very careful look at that and said, you know, we've already got an acquired situation with Link for NAT traversal. So let's go ahead and implement a complete end-to-end encrypted peer-to-peer solution that leverages the security aspects of Link. So by that, I mean TLS, secure RTP, Stun, Turn, and ICE, all of the same mechanisms. Let's even leverage the encryption certificates that are available on the Edge server. So effectively, it looks and behaves exactly like a Link call, in spite of it joining a Skype caller into a Link user. So that helps to address the end-to-end encryption aspect of this. B, it helps to be somewhat more friendly towards the security officer as they look at the type of traffic that's going to be coming over their network. The second thing, of course, is we needed standard video codec. So we standardized on 264 SVC. That's been implemented both within the Skype consumer client as well as within the Link client. Okay.
And the other thing to note here as well is that in a mobile-first, cloud-first world, we had to have mobile clients in this version 2. And taking a bit extra time delivering it, we will have mobile clients supporting it when it does ship.
And I also forgot to mention that the Silk codec is the codec that's used for this particular call. So those of you that do traces, are used to having a look at the invite messages that get sent by Link onto the network, you may have noticed that we've added an additional codec into the mix. We were doing RT audio, but now it's RT audio, and in second place, you'll find that the Silk codec is there. Now, I've already given you the reasons why that makes sense, but effectively, with the latest updates, you will have seen that codec has been supported for quite some time within the Link capability set. So effectively, we've already got you prepared to receive that Silk call using Skype as we open up the Skype capability. So what that moves us towards is kind of a best of breed experience for the user as they use real-time media over the internet. All right, and of course, we've also implemented this capability in Office 365. So, in a cloud first, mobile first world, we're hitting the buttons and delivering the Link Skype connectivity. It's actually relatively straightforward to activate this for an Office 365 deployment. All right, it's demo time, so fingers crossed. I'm actually the Skype user here. So Derek would see the picture on your left. I would see the one on the right here, so let's give it a go. So I'll drop out to my desktop. Trying to find my mouse. Ah, there we are. All right, so this is a typical Skype client. Let me just show you the client itself. There we are, so these are members of my family. Oh, sorry about that. Thanks, folks. Okay, so this is a typical Skype client, as I said, and I'm going to go ahead and make my call. Now, I'm muting. All right, so this is me. I'll keep my face relatively in frame. There we go. All right, so we've got Derek's answer. Yeah, that's better. Perfect. Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, this may seem trivial, but it's the first time we've given this demo for about 4 months now, so we're particularly happy that it worked.
We're very excited.
All right, thank you. Thanks for being with us on this. Later on, what we're going to do is we're going to do a couple more demos. So we're going to do a demo to a mobile phone. So we're going to walk around the room a little bit. But we're also going to generate this call from a website by embedding a Skype calling button into a website that I use for demo purposes. Okay. So back to the presentation. I have to remember to move it over. Good. All right. So demo done. The gods are with us. And so now we're going to have a quick look at the opportunities this opens up. I won't spend much time on this, but I'm sure you're ahead of us in this respect, thinking about how you would use this. But, you know, effectively, the way that we communicate today is kind of either very costly or it's somewhat inconvenient. But a lot of call centers have shifted away from voice first to actually being chat first. And I implemented the Skype contact center that we used to interact with our own customers. These were business customers, and so we built that using a mix of Skype and a chat system. But it's not uncommon today to start with chat and then want to escalate that communication up through the modalities, hence the demo that that David Newman gave in session B303. 1-800 numbers or 0900 numbers here in Spain obviously have a minutes charge associated with those calls, which drives the interaction with the customers to be a little bit wonky. In other words, you want to provide excellent service, but at the same time, that call is costing you by the minute. So there's an incentive to get the call done as quickly as possible, which doesn't create the best of experiences for the person on the other end of the call. By putting that call onto the network, we can avoid those charges, and we can interact as long as we need to with the customer, create a great experience. I mean, the customer satisfaction on our contact center, the one I mentioned earlier on, was somewhere in the 98% satisfied. So the ability to go to screen share, the ability to go to video, was hugely successful with the customers. They love that capability. Of course, we're also doing email and things like that, so if we can put calling buttons into those emails and make it easier for people to reach us, all the better. Of course, we've still got the traditional phone call mechanisms, which we've been delivering. I'm pleased to say that Gartner has now placed Microsoft and Link in the leaders quadrant for enterprise telephony in their enterprise telephony analysis for unified communications. And obviously, we've got face-to-face meetings. We all know the problem. We've got to get on planes, go meet people. It's fine when it's large numbers of folks like this, but obviously, when it's ones and twosies, all of those costs build up. So we have two complementary solutions here, and I need to distinguish between the two. The one on the left is the one that we're showing you here in this session. This is the Skype URI buttons placed on a website that trigger a Skype call. And I'm going to show you that journey with all of the little windows. There's a plugin involved, etc. Well, plugins are becoming an annoyance. And the industry as a whole has been investigating ways to deliver a plugin-free solution to that. And so you hear about the standard WebRTC. We still have an ability to take a web-based call. We started with chat, with UCWA. The demos that were delivered in the Dev B303 session actually show a call that has been entirely delivered through the web browser. And the idea there is that you would escalate from chat to audio to video. But that would actually be very appropriate for an anonymous style call, whereas the one on the left is more for an account that you already know that has a relationship with you, where it's important for you to know the Skype ID of the person who's making the call and to route the call appropriately on your side. So two different approaches. Known customers on the left with Skype, anonymous type calls off your website over on the right. Both can be embedded in your websites, but one might be hidden behind authentication. Think about a finance organization that wants to provide Skype calling for its key accounts. They would authenticate them behind a password process, and then they would provide buttons that can be used to dial in directly. Okay. Communicating with suppliers, actually, I would have to say this is one of the more widely used capabilities of Skype interoperability. Organizations, particularly in the area of franchising businesses, where they need to bring people in, but they need to see their presence on an ongoing basis without necessarily having them go out and deploy Link. So this is a great way of doing that and keeping in touch. And then if you're going to run a meeting, obviously you send out that Link invitation and you have them join using the web app, using the Link experience. But that ability to always have that person within your reach and see their presence is critically important. Friends and family, you saw the video earlier on. Keeping in touch with friends and family, we see this a lot in the types of businesses that are typically on the road a lot. So that would be the sort of accountancy or consultancy firms. People who are on the road a lot still need to be part of the family. So the ability to see, let's say, your son or your daughter come to a Skype call or maybe even a moment like they take their first steps, etc. We get a lot of feedback about how Skype helps people to keep their family more together while family members are on the road. Hiring efficiency. It's not uncommon when someone goes off to college or university that they're equipped by their parents, let's say, with Skype so they can keep in touch. Now, you can then kind of move to the next step in their lives at graduation. They start the interview process. So they're looking for a job. And typically, HR departments have been some of the early adopters on Skype connectivity because they're interested in keeping in touch with candidates. So the ones that they're going to move forwards with after the filtering process, they obviously want to keep their fingers on, you know, is that person available? Can I reach out to them? Can I explain the next steps? But obviously, the first objective is to use Skype as a filtering mechanism, you know, so rather than have a lot of people come over and pay for the flights, etc., you can do that early screening using Skype, and a lot of people have done that. Just show of hands, how many of you have interviewed using a Skype experience? Yeah, a few. We may not be the generation that is being impacted by this most. No disrespect, ladies and gentlemen.
He did say we.
Yeah, but if you think about it, that opens up an opportunity, right? Because you've got people who are already familiar with the tool. So when you think about rolling out the capability within an enterprise or your organization, if they already know how to use it, that learning curve has already been addressed, right? So now you have a more familiar user within your organization, and they expect to be able to use these sorts of tools. All right, so we're now going to try another demonstration, but I want to take you through the details of it first. If you go to developer.skype.com, you will find a set of explanations on how to set up buttons in websites, mobile applications, as well as emails. I've leveraged that information to set up a little demo for us here. So you get to select the graphic, you can pre-select the modality. If you say, okay, I want this to be a video call, then it will make the video call rather than going audio or chat first, but you can go the other way if you want. And then I've got a little trick here, so I'd like you to pay attention. Let's see, so I've checked the documentation and it doesn't cover this, so I'm giving you special information for those of you that are attending TechEd today. But the field just after the word Skype in the code is the number 2, and number 2 refers to link. So effectively this is a Skype button that is now going to make a link call. So you need to program that into the button on the website. But if you do that, then effectively you can now tie it in to whoever is assigned the ID behind it. And you'll see I've got some code that shows how I set this up to talk to Derek. All right, so there are some prerequisites. As I said earlier, we are addressing the MSA requirement, but it's still there today. You must also have established a contact relationship with the user. All right, so here's how it's going to work. I'll give you this quick overview now before we go off and do it. So you visit the website, you click the button that says call me, it's going to prompt you to allow Skype to actually get launched. That's just a security mechanism. And once you're doing that, you can then talk and chat. Okay? So that's how it's going to work. And I think there's a little more animation here. There we go. All right. So before I show you the source code, I'll just drop out, and we're going to go to a website and give that a go if I can find the mouse.
Disappears.
There it is. All right, here we go. So I've got the website here. I'm juggling screens. Sorry, folks. It's on its way. There we are. So I loaded up this website, And the code I'm going to show you is the code behind this button right here where I put the mouse, okay? So I'm going to go ahead and press this. You can guess what's going to happen, right? So I press this. I already have Skype. Yep. I'm going to allow it. Yes. Let's go for it. And I'm already starting up a video call. My video has started, and we're calling Derek. Very good. Another great demo. All right, so not much kind of impact, I know, but what this says is a dumb marketing guy can put together a website with a few, you know, little moments of clicking on a web portal to get this done. If you go to the developer.skype.com website, you'll see the instructions very clear on how to do this. Just remember that number 2 if you're testing link Skype connectivity, okay? And I'm going to show you the code, so you can use this particular session as a reference. So we'll shut that call down. There we go. And we will try to head back. So here's the code. All right, so I've got a gift here. This is a, I'm going to sell it first, okay? This is a from a company called AG, or Alchemy Gear, I think they're called. It's a Link branded bag. It's a carry-all, and it's actually recuperated from Inner Tubes. This is a company that upscale recuperated items, so it's nice and solid. It also uses a safety belt from a car as the strap, so very solid, guaranteed for life. These are actually quite expensive. I've been to the website today just to check out what I was giving away. I'd like the first person who can tell me the answer to my question to take delivery of this fabulous item right here. Can you tell me how I make sure this is a link call? Yep, you got it, sir. It's one behind you, I'm afraid. Got a 2. He said it. There we go. So thanks for playing. All right. So if you follow the code that's up on the screen, then the magic of a link Skype call can be yours. Of course, you would have already set up the relationship between the Skype account. Do you mind if we take the question afterwards, sir? Yep, thank you. All right. We already did that demo, and we're going to have a look at the underlying technologies. I suppose we could try a mobile call. Do you want to try a mobile call?
Let's try it.
All right. So before we come to the underlying technologies, one more juggling of my mouse. All right. So, ready?
Yep.
Very good. So I'm going to call Derek again. Here we go. Now, the way we tested this before is let's get the media connected. So we've got an audio call that's running right now. And we're going to go ahead and switch that over to video. So here we go. And video should now be up. Excellent. I see good things. Here it is. All right. So we have him on his mobile phone. And he's just going to... There we go.
For the audience. Hello, everybody. It's a live call. This is the future.
Okay, folks. Now, remember, this is being recorded. That was you guys. Thank you. Awesome. Thank you very much, everyone. And more mouse juggling. Very good. So the underlying technology is just a quick overview of the codecs involved. So the video codecs, as I mentioned before, H.264 SVC, end-to-end. 265 is of interest, so we'll need to keep watching that space. I think the industry in general is not talking 50% compression. They're typically maybe 30% going up against SVC. So there are some efficiencies to be gained from 265, so keep watching the space. Things, things are always being pushed in the right direction. Let's keep going. The next item I'm going to talk about is about control. Now, some of you allow Skype on your networks. So in that sense, you've got a Skype consumer interface, and then you also have Link, and your users can switch and swap between the two of them. But there is concern about the network bandwidth that those Skype calls may be using. Perhaps this isn't the primary communications mechanism the organization is sanctioning. Hopefully that would be Link. So you may want to control the way that Skype's behaving on the network. So I've documented that process, and I'm sharing it with you right now. I think it's important that you should know this. Even if Link is your primary tool, just be aware that if you do need to control Skype in some way on your network, then these steps will help you get there. So first of all, within the Skype desktop client, there is an options menu item. Select that, drop down to the connection choice that is underneath the advanced options, and you'll find that you can set a port for outgoing and even incoming calls. And what you can do there is you can establish a SOX 5 proxy. You can put that SOX 5 proxy into the DMZ, and that will effectively route your Skype traffic through the SOX 5 proxy. And then, of course, it's a simple matter of setting the priority for the Ethernet port that the SOX 5 proxy is coming in on. So you do need to, you know, do the wiring a little bit more carefully, but effectively you can prioritize the traffic coming from the SOX 5 proxy as you load it onto the router. So use weighted fair queuing or other mechanisms within that egress router to prioritize the traffic either up or down for your Skype traffic. And by doing that, you're able to control the use of the WAN by your Skype users. So this information isn't shared very much, but if you do need to control it, hopefully this will help you get that job done. All right. I'm now going to talk about Stun, Turn, and Ice. You probably already know this, but if not, this is a very entry-level explanation of what we have just implemented for Link Skype connectivity calls. So let's go. Basically, we have an ICE server capability that is actually supported by the edge server role within the Link architecture. So that edge server sits in the DMZ, just like that SOX 5 proxy I was talking about earlier, and it acts as a proxy on behalf of your Link users. So when they're trying to set a call up with someone outside the organization, they're going to try different mechanisms. The first is, hey, can I just find that user directly? Well, that's going to work if the Skype user has a publicly available IP address. But more often than not, they're actually hidden behind a second NATed firewall. So actually finding them is going to be a problem. But if for one reason or other they happen to have a publicly available IP address, then that call would work directly. It's unlikely, but of course that's the first attempt. If not, then we're going to go to our ICE server, and we're going to use the ICE server to help us find the far end party. And in that case, we're going to be using the STUN protocol mechanism, and we effectively link up at a signaling level with the far end party going through the STUN server, but the actual media can now go peer to peer. So that is the STUN mechanism, using the ICE server as a proxy for the signaling path. All right? The third option is, if all else fails, the edge server is now going to use TURN, where it will act as both a signaling and a media proxy on behalf of the caller. So let's show that one. All right, option three, there it is. Both media and signaling are now going through the edge server. So effectively, we have a device in the middle. But of course, this is your edge server. It's highly secure. It's highly trusted. And of course, we're using all of the certificates that are built into that edge server, so we trust it. All right, so this is a network monitor dump that Derek and I did for one of the calls that we're doing. I've X'd out the IP addresses. But effectively, what we're showing is a Link Skype connectivity call that's going live. And as you can see, TURN, STUN are being used in order to get this call set up. So this is kind of proof, yes, actually, Link Skype connectivity calls now using StunTurn and ICE for these calls. So you can do this too. You can put a network monitor onto your network and just track your Link and your Skype calls. As you see, we've got logos here, both for the Skype side of things, skype.exe, as well as Link with link.exe. Both of those being captured. There's more information, obviously, that comes across on the Link side. It's better known as a protocol by Network Monitor. All right. I'm now going to talk about codecs briefly. So just to net out where we are, the Skype side of things use Silk and H.264 SVC as the video codec. Link used real-time audio and H.264 SVC for video. As I've mentioned, for Link Skype connectivity calls, we're going to be using Silk and 264. Let's just have a quick listen to the difference. We've got samples for this. So I'm going to go ahead and play 729. I am not.
Where to administer medicine to animals is typically a very difficult matter.
In the course of a December tour in Yorkshire,
They're very posh English accents. Okay, we're going to try a Silk call now. If I can work out which way to go with the mouse, there we go.
To administer medicine to animals is frequently a very difficult matter.
In the course of a December tour in Yorkshire,
To administer medicine to animals is frequently a very difficult matter.
In the course of a December tour in Yorkshire.
Okay. The point we're making, I suppose, is the sibilance, the high range clicks and noises, they add a lot of value to the call. So by using a super wideband codec, we're able to deliver a richer experience to the end user. The statistics that we're showing here show that as we move to higher bandwidth, super wideband codec styles, that the quality of the call creates a longer call. Now, if you think about the number of calls that Skype is doing every day, every month, we have more statistics on call quality and the duration of calls than probably anyone on Earth today. We use those to understand whether we're doing the right things in terms of codecs. We know that better quality calls lead to longer calls. We know that people are more comfortable talking. So do with that information what you will, but we know we're on the right track as we push the envelope in terms of call quality, and we'll continue to do that. You can read more. I've got a blog reference at the bottom of the screen here, which you can read more on later. It talks about this precise issue. All right. Deployment details. So we're now going to look at actually rolling this out. I'll breathe a sigh of relief, as you will, because I'm going to hand over to Derek. But just before I do that, I'm going to talk about the concept of privacy and security. Now, I'm not selling Skype today, but when we do our calls with customers, they often ask, so tell me a little bit more about how Skype manages privacy and security in general. There is a website. I've got the URL up there, but I'll just read that out. www.skype.com/ENUS security. I think if you just put security after the www.skype.com, you'll get there. But effectively, this is all of the guidelines and guidance that we provide to our users about how we recommend they set themselves up, should they be visible to the general public, or should they maintain their privacy until they've established a contact relationship with someone. How long do they retain the history of the chats that they're generating? For some regulated organizations, that's actually an issue. But Skype has a set of registry settings that can be used to control these features. And the very first one talks about file transfer. You can actually switch off Skype file transfer. You do hear news about how Skype is used as a vehicle for security issues. But I would point out that if you follow these guidelines, you can protect yourself. You know, we don't recommend using these sorts of applications on a machine that doesn't have some sort of malware protection. But you can switch off file transfer. You can determine how long you keep your chat history, etc. So you've got a lot of control. It's well worth reading these documents if you're just thinking about allowing Skype on the PCs that you manage. But as you know, our preference is actually that within the enterprise, within a business environment, that Link is the appropriate tool, which is why we built Link Skype Connectivity. Let consumers continue to use Skype, and in the enterprise, we'll go on using Link with all of the security, reliability, and the control mechanisms that we've built in specifically because our enterprise customers asked for them. Okay.
And now just a couple of slides on some things to be aware of as you roll out Link Skype Connectivity. You'll notice here on the left, one of the more common things that happens is the Link user is not allowing invites but block all of the communications. That middle button has to be checked or the one below it. If the top one is checked, then they won't ever get the invite from their Skype buddies. So that's one of the more common things we see happen. The other thing is that in the Link 2013 client, you'll notice that new thing is highlighted. That's where your contact request will appear, and many times people forget to check there. So there's a couple of places where if you have a contact who's trying to add you as a contact and it's not working, those are two things that are commonly the problem. I will talk about the MSA. You do have to create a Microsoft account today to enjoy the Link Skype Connectivity experience. It's quite straightforward. In fact, this experience has even improved so that when you the first time you go to Skype, it's very obvious how to go and create a Microsoft account, and we really do encourage you to do that in order to enjoy this experience. So when you are in Link, how do you add that Skype contact? Well, you'll have to add them. I'm sorry. When you're in Skype, how do you add the contact from Skype, from Link? What you're doing here is adding the user by its domain name. So what's happened is we have essentially the important point here is that we're just verifying that it's a domain that is part of the Federation. We're not checking the username. So when you add these users, you have to be very careful and very specific about the username getting it right, because we're not really checking to see if you've got the right name. So you'll end up with some contacts in your contact list that are phantom contacts, another common problem. And when you're in Link, the good news here is that Link 2013 anticipates people adding contacts that are not from the organization. You'll see the experience actually gives you some choices for Skype, and it's actually added some additional ones. So that's the good news. If you're using Link 2010, anyone using Link 2010? Oh, not, no, great. Well, if you were, there's a bit of a challenge with adding contacts whose MSA names are not Microsoft domains. So they're not at live.com, at outlook.com. You have to do what's called name decoration. And I won't go into details of what that is, but that is an issue when you're in Link 2010 when you're adding these contacts. And the last point is that this thing's not moving. Okay. Oh. Space. All right. The last thing just to note is that currently the presence experiences are different in the two products. And I just point this out just so that you'll know that there is some mapping going on between these two. Because there are some that just don't exist. There's one that Skype has that's kind of cool called Invisible. I'm not really sure what that means, but how that gets mapped into Link is a challenge. So this experience will continue to improve, and it works pretty well, but just be aware that the two products do have different presence modes, and they don't map directly to each other. So that can sometimes be a challenge. In addition, Link uses different ways to get a user's presence. It uses Outlook, uses the calendar. So there are multiple things that are different in how these two products do presence. And in this current version, the experience can be a challenge. It's going to continue to improve, and especially in version 2, this experience will improve as well. And I think we'll go into configuration.
All right, very good. There are three steps to configuration, and we've got 15 minutes. So there is, this is fully documented, and I'm going to take you to the online documentation for this in a second. But first thing to say is, this is actually just like PIC. If you have already opened up PIC for your link deployment, then you're actually ready with step one. You need to establish a certificate on your Edge server, and you need to establish open up policies for your users. I'll take you through that really quickly. So first of all, PIC, go to pic.link.com and follow those steps. If you've already got this up and running, you don't need to do it again. And this effectively announces to the Skype Cloud in general that you're available for federating the Skype consumer world with your link deployment, okay? Word of warning, if you're in a hurry, start now. Because there is something of a lag time on this, because they do need to verify that you are who you say you are. So they can't let just anyone open this capability up. So there is that level of sort of just ensuring identity can add up to 25 days. So I give you that word of warning. Of course, you can always try to fast track, but it's worth, it's worth starting early. Planning, always good. The next thing is to set up the Edge with the appropriate certificate. By the way, I will be displaying the documentation. I see folks taking images of this, but it's in the doc. But do keep taking those photos. I don't want to stop you doing that. So what you're going to do is you're going to prepare the request, but you're going to keep it on a hard disk, for example. Here we go. We are requesting a certificate. We're going to tell it where to put it. We're going to give it a friendly name. Here we go. Contoso.com is my SIP domain. That's the one I want. It gives us a chance to review the request. Remember, we're sending this as a request for a certificate to a certificate authority. Here we go. We're executing the commands. And we get back a certificate request. Basically, copy and paste that, send it through. You'll get the certificate back, at which point it's import the certificate using the usual mechanism on the Edge server. You import it, you're now up and running, you've done step two. And we're over to assigning basic policies to users. So we need to enable communication with federated users, seems obvious. We need to enable communication with public users. Both of those need to be checked. The next thing we need to do is we need to enable federation and public IM connectivity on the Edge server. And that, sub-bullets also need to be selected, enabling partner domain discovery and send archiving disclaimer to federated partners. Then finally, this step here is actually slightly different in the documentation. So I promised myself that I would display the doc so you can see it directly. But as you can see, it really is leveraging the Messenger infrastructure in order to deliver this. And I'll show you the documentation in a second. You'll see that that is reinforced. All right. Now, if you're doing this, that was all Link Server. If you're doing this for Link Online, it's actually just one button. You go ahead and click that button, and you're up and running. If you go ahead and click the button where it says let users talk and chat with people outside your company, that needs to be set to on. And if you click the learn item, what you find is it's actually going to talk about Skype in there. It's up on the top line. Link Online helps your organization keep in touch. You can also let people add Link or Skype users outside. Okay, so just set that one button and you're up and running. It's that easy. All right, I've got a concluding slide, but I did promise to show you the documentation, and we also promised to start with some questions. So while I'm juggling the mouse, yet again, why don't we pass the mic around? So show of hands for questions.
Do we have the mic? Or
we do.
Yes.
It should be on the way.
There you go.
We're using the mic for those people who are dialing in from outside. Ah, there we go.
I have two questions. The first one is, do we need to prepare anything if we have already the federation set up in color?
Nope.
To use the video?
Yeah, it'll work the same way.
Okay, so it just will work then when I do a video call to Skype.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the second question that everybody will ask is, when will it be available?
We didn't say that, did we?
We didn't. We preferred to tell you to check the blogs. I think that's all we can say. I'm not actually allowed to give any other indication. I hate to do that, but gosh, it worked fine today, didn't it?
Coming soon.
Oh.
I saw the demo 1 year ago, that's why I was asking.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you see us
too? All right. I've given you the URL for this document along with its title. Go ahead and use your favorite Bing search mechanism, and you'll find that you have a complete guide to everything I've shared with you. I'm just going to maximize that, flip through a few slides. Here we go.
And this actually does cover that name decoration issue right in the section he's about to come to. So if you're a Link 2010 account, you'll want to take a look at that.
Yeah, so this is the part that talks about Messenger right here. Yeah, I think that should be displayed top left on your screen. Name decoration.
It's further. Here we're getting there. It looked like my slides.
Very good. Okay. Excellent. Next question.
With the fairly recent announcement that you're doing free conference group calling within Skype, are you going to allow Skype users to join Link conference calls or otherwise take part in them?
That's on the roadmap, but it won't come in this next with version 2. So we understand there's things like having Skype users join the call, doing screen sharing, and additional capabilities that people want in this experience. That'll come later, but not with this next version.
I think just to comment a little, the call element of that is very, very important for adoption, basically, just to kind of get people actually able to have a conference call.
We hear you.
Yeah, I think we're all on the same page with you. Multi-party calling, screen sharing, etc., is actually part of everything that we want to achieve here. So absolutely agree. But for now, it's just peer-to-peer. Next up.
Yeah, I have a question about this Skype call button. Is it still really necessary to have this person in your contact list before making the call?
We have experienced that is the case. We do want to do a little bit of testing. We haven't had time to do that testing, but for now I have to say yes, they must be in your contact list. We're hoping to find a workaround, but for now we have to stick with that message. They need to be in your contact list, which is one of the reasons why I've kept encouraging you to have a look at B303, where you can do the anonymous calling.
Yeah, thank you.
In version 2, Fix here's a problem that with the invites. That's a problem that invites in the Link client don't see that and accept it. And that's a problem, and the Skype user invited the Link user, then the Link user must also accept a new invite that sees the Skype user, and the Skype user accepts it again. That's maybe we discussed in LinkConf in February, but no product manager told about that.
So I think I know what you're getting at is there are challenges in this current version with the add contacts experience. And in general, there are a number of cases where they do fail somewhat more frequently than we'd like to see. So that is being addressed in version 2. That is probably the one of the biggest stumbling blocks with version 1 is those add contacts not being seen. And it is true that it does require a handshake on both sides. If you do federation from link to link, you'll notice that you can add a contact without having them accept you. But in this experience, it does require both sides to accept the invitation. And that is a unique feature of this experience, and that will be the same for version 2, and it will be the same. But the add contacts will get better and more reliable for version 2.
Before we move to the next question, we're down to 6 minutes, and I have to ask that you you send in your evals. We put a lot of effort into making sure that we've got all of these demos, and we try to keep them fresh, and frankly, we've shared something with you that we started being able to share about a week ago. So hopefully you found this interesting, but do please give us your evals. We will do our best to accommodate your suggestions. We try to get a mix of demo plus technology. Hope that was useful. But that's my pitch. Back to your questions.
You have this nice codec Silk with Skype. Any plan to have it implemented for link-to-link calls?
Well, yes, actually, if it performs better than real-time audio, and all tests indicate that that is the case, you will see more use of Silk, particularly on non-quality of service networks initially. That's certainly for the case of calls to Skype. You may also see mobile come in as well. Next up. Can you keep your hand up? Okay, there we go.
I have two questions. The first is, when I receive a phone call from a link to Skype on my mobile, I cannot see the calling number. I don't know if you know this, and it's quite curious. We open the case, but I think that still the problem is there. And another thing that I wanted to ask is, would it be possible from link from Skype to call a response group in link domain?
Yeah, so both of those cases are obviously critically important for us to deliver. I can't tell you whether we're fixing the caller ID component, but obviously it's required. Yeah. And then the second one is actually not in this release, which is the what I call the B-leg calls. So those B-leg calls are a challenge, and let me tell you why. It all starts with that contact relationship being established between two individuals. We can't extend that to a group. They are aware of the issue. We've raised it. It's seen as a non-blocking concern. But it's certainly something in terms of a use case. And that's why we need to do more testing. I said earlier to the gentleman who asked that question earlier, we need to do more testing because we want to look at each of the scenarios and work out what's in, what's out, particularly in the contact center experience.
Okay, thanks a lot.
There was a question here. You were beaten by someone behind, actually. But we're trying to be fair.
Thank you. This is more of a link question, really. Is there any plans to separate out federation from link from other types of federation? For instance, we federate with potentially customers, and we don't necessarily want, I don't know, cleaners instant messaging the CIO of one of our customers, but making a link call might be acceptable. But with link, it's federation is either on or off across anybody you federate with.
So you're saying you need more granular control of who can call who?
Yeah, essentially, if you look on the link kind of feedback website, it's a pretty popular thing to be requested. So, you know, if you've got customers you're dealing with who are important customers, you don't necessarily just want anybody being able to search for them in the a link address book and find somebody and call them. But if they want to phone somebody on Skype, it's perfectly acceptable.
Yeah, so we need sort of an access control list for that feature. I'm with you. Some way of controlling whether they get it or they don't. And preferably, actually, who can talk to who. Yeah.
How is the CPU load of Silk codec compared to RT Audio and other codecs? Any idea about that?
Yeah, I mentioned, I think, 30% improvement for non-quality of service networks. So where you have large amounts of jitter, Silk outperforms both 722 and real-time audio.
So that means it consumes less CPU?
CPU.
CPU
load or
processing load?
Yeah, I don't have the processing numbers, I'm afraid. I'm sure we do, but I haven't got that in my brain. Sorry about that.
One thing, especially for the Windows phones, is going to be improvements maybe for the notification in general, because they are tend to be not too, they don't come every time, especially from link to Skype.
The ad contacts or the...
No, I mean when you do a call or a chat notification, that the simply doesn't come, the toast, or if the toast comes and the live dial doesn't increase the number of missed messages or calls.
Right. Yeah,
this is a highly popular topic in the Skype forums.
Yeah, so we have a team of people who are busily getting this released, and I know that they will have a look at some of those issues. I know for sure. I can't say whether we're going to solve it in a very sort of black and white way. You know, will it be perfect every time? I don't know. But I know that they are concerned about the issue that you've raised.
Are there any plans to create kind of native support to call from Link to PSTN through Skype?
Not using the Skype backend or the Skype network, no.
Let's see, if we go back to the Link conference that was held in February, you probably saw that in the keynote, Gurdeep Singhpal mentioned that calling for Office 365 to the PSTN is something that would be made available soon. And so that work is being done, but the blanket statement you've made is broader, you see. You've said,
right,
can we leverage Skype? And the answer has to be for that, the one Derek gave. So I'm saying we will have PSTN, but the approach isn't quite the one that you just you used.
Is the plan that there is a new Skype Translate solution include in Link?
In the first release, it's going to be just in the Skype Modern client, and I think that's planned for fairly soon. I think we announced it's coming out fairly soon. You could expect that'll be used other places once as it matures. So I don't think that's the end of it, but it'll first appear in the Skype Modern client.
I see stunned silence that you don't have any more questions. You're surprising yourselves here. There must be something else.
You've been a great audience. Thank you.